White Rocket Entertainment. White Rocket Entertainment, podcast number 333. Hello, and welcome to On Her Majesty's Secret Podcast, brought to you by White Rocket Entertainment in association with Patreon.com. I'm Van Allen Plexico, and we are having a very, very special episode of the show tonight where I'm joined by one of my regular co-hosts, Jared Albrecht. Say hello, Jared.
Good evening, everyone. I am so excited. I feel like I should strap on a jetpack.
that you secretly hid up on top of the mausoleum before anybody knew it, right?
Oh, yeah. That's where you keep those.
That's where you keep them, absolutely. And Jared, introduce our guest since you were the one that had the brilliant idea to go and round him up.
Oh, my goodness. It is my distinct honor and pleasure to introduce a famous, awesome, just all-around great novelist, Mr. Raymond Benson. Welcome to our show, Raymond.
Well, thank you guys for having me.
We are very excited, because big fans of your work, and we know that you know Bond like few people do, and you have been involved on a very official level with Bond for a number of years there. So we have some specific questions for you and your work and everything coming up, but first we want to talk a little bit about Bond in general with you. But I guess we should introduce, you know, for folks that don't know, tell the folks the things that you are best known for in the Bond world. You wrote a whole series of novels there in the late 90s and early 2000s.
That's right. I was the third continuation author and first American. Mm-hmm. Out of a small group of guys who have been officially hired to write new James Bond novels. And but before that, way back in the early 1980s, I wrote a book called The James Bond Bedside Companion, which was this coffee table nonfiction tome all about the history of Bond. And that's what really kind of established me in the Bond fan community. And it got me in cahoots, basically, with the Fleming estate. So I've kind of been in bed with Bond a long time, so to speak.
that's the appropriate terminology to use when talking about Bond, yes. That's exactly. So let me ask Jared real quick, since we have you on, Raymond. Jared, you thought of Raymond even before I did. What have you read of his in particular that made you excited to have him on?
Well, obviously, his run on the Bonds. A couple years ago, I picked up both of his omnibus books,
mm-hmm.
Choice
huge.
Of Weapons and the Union Trilogy, if I'm remembering those titles correctly.
Mm-hmm.
And I fell in love with it. I mean, I've read just about every Bond book, but Raymond's style is my favorite. I know that's sacrilege in some circles, but we all have our favorites. Mm-hmm. And so I was definitely excited to get him on here. For me, it actually all started with High Time to Kill. I mm-hmm. found that one all by itself and read it, loved it. And then I found out at that time, oh, this guy's written a bunch, and I got his omnibus books, and wow. So very excited to have him on.
And it's
interesting that those anthologies publish them out of order. Choice of Weapons has books 1, 2, and 6, mm. and the Union Trilogy has 3, 4, and 5. So,
And I'm just nerdy enough to have looked it up so I could read them in the right order, and I know Van will believe me when I tell him that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, I mean, they did that, right, because three of them, you intentionally wrote three of them to echo the Spectre trilogy that Fleming did, so you did sort of your own take on that, which is the Union trilogy, right?
That's true, yeah. They should be published together. That's correct. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, if you read all six in order, I think there is a through line that kind of there is an arc that kind of goes through them. So, you know, I'm hoping that people will be obsessive enough to to kind of look it up and do read them in order.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yes, I did it right.
Of course, for people who do ebooks, you can get each book separately as on Kindle.
Mm-hmm. There you go. I was going to say that seeing the Union trilogy, I was waiting for you to write the Confederate trilogy to go along with that, but I guess that's oh, boy. So, let's see. We want to get on into it, and we have some general Bond questions for you first, because Jared and I are really curious. We're, you know, all Bond fans want to know what other Bond fans think about the Bond material. So, how did you first encounter James Bond, right? Because, like, Jared, you know, with me, it was seeing Diamonds Are Forever and Live and Let Die being shown constantly on Sunday night movie on ABC when I was a little kid, and Live and Let Die scaring me to death. Jared, I think a little bit later than that. Is that right?
Very similar. Yeah, I came to it a little later, but pretty much the Sunday night movies. Plus, like an old Russian woman once tried to kill me with a dagger in her shoe. So
that'll do it.
You know,
yeah.
It all comes together.
So Raymond, what was your first introduction to Bond, and what pulled you into being a big Bond aficionado?
Well, I guess I'm a little older than you guys. So I started way back in the 60s. Hmm. I was living in a small West Texas town in 1964. I was friends with a couple of girls that lived next door to me, and I was 9 years old. And the mom had a record album, which was the Goldfinger soundtrack, and she was playing it. And I was going, "Wow, that's really cool music. What is this?" And she showed me the record cover, and this was this movie, and it was out in the theaters at the time.
Oh, wow.
Goldfinger, you know. And I went, "Wow, that's really cool." So I went home and I told my dad, "Let's go see Goldfinger." And he went, "I don't know if you're old enough to see that." And I go, "I don't care. I want to go." So my dad took me to see Goldfinger. And, you know, that for a 9-year-old boy in late 1964, that was like opening up the libido door. I immediately then realized that it was based on a series of books and that there would be another movie and all this. So I went to the library and checked out my first Ian Fleming novel from the library, which was Dr. No. And I read that even though I was 9 years old.
Wow.
And I started reading the books. And then about 6 months later came the double feature re-release of Dr. No and From Russia with Love. So I saw those. And then at the end of the year, Thunderball came out. So within 1 year's time, wow, I had seen all four of the first Bond films on the big screen.
Nice.
And I was heavily involved in reading the books. I was buying those paperbacks, those Signet paperbacks that were coming out in that time period. And then by that time, the toys were coming out, the merchandise. And, you know, you got to remember, Bond was the Star Wars of the 1960s.
Right.
They were huge. So, yeah, I became a big fan right then and there. I just sort of lived it up until, you know, I was an adult. And by the time we got to the 80s, you know, I was living in New York City. I had this idea to write this nonfiction book because at the time there was not a book that encompassed everything. A biography of Ian Fleming, a history of the Bond phenomenon, and analyses and critiques of all the books and all the movies, all in one book. There was nothing like that. There had been a couple of books on the movies. There had been a couple of biographies of Fleming, which were out of print. Maybe one or two books on the novels, and they were out of print. I wanted everything in one package. You know, it's the book I wanted to read, so I wrote it.
That's what you do. There you go.
So, you know, I got the contract. I pitched it to a publisher and got a contract. It took me 3 years to write it. And I went to England and to do research, and I met members of Ian Fleming's family and some of his friends and colleagues, and you know, a lot of the people that were still alive then but are no longer with us.
Right.
And the book came out in 1984, and that kind of, you know, sort of established me as this sort of, you know, quote unquote Bond expert.
Mm-hmm.
And I got involved with the fan clubs. I don't know if you remember, there was an American fan club that published a magazine called Bondage.
Yes.
Yeah.
I don't have any jokes for that.
Yeah. So I became vice president of the fan club and contributed articles to that. And that was all during the 80s. This is when John Gardner was writing the novels.
Yeah.
And then, you know, it was like 10 years later in late 95. I'm probably answering a lot of your questions.
That's fine.
In one answer.
No, they're
thanks for being here, Raymond.
They're tuning in to hear you, not us. So you just carry on.
All right. Well, in late 95, you know, John Gardner decided he didn't want to write the books anymore. And so the Fleming Estate just called me out of the blue, you know, and asked if I wanted to give it a shot. And so, you know, the rest, as they say, is history. Okay. Next question.
Well,
I think it's great that I told you this before, Van.
Yeah.
When I was 5 years old, the first record I ever bought at a flea market was the Goldfinger record. So my story starts where his does. So I'm just waiting on my call from the Fleming Foundation, really.
You know, I do think it's kind of interesting that my first, you know, exposure to Bond was the music.
Same.
And, you know, I'm a huge John Barry fan. And, you know, and in 2002... I finally, you know, got to meet him and actually, I don't know if you know this story, but in 2002 in England, the Ian Fleming Foundation presented John Barry with a Lifetime Achievement Award. And I was asked to play the piano, a suite of his music for him and 500 other people, which included the Bond producers and stars of Die Another Day, which had gathered at this thing. And so I had a 12-minute suite of John Barry music that I played on the piano.
Good heavens.
And after it was done, he came up on stage and gave me a hug. So,
holy cow.
You know,
that's a win.
I know. That moment right there made everything worth it.
If you had never done anything else, if you'd never written these books,
right?
That still is like at the top, you know. So the fact that the same person that would play the music for all that would then write the novels, that's amazing. That really is remarkable.
I treasure that moment.
Yeah, so. Absolutely. Well, we have a few other standard boilerplate questions we want to get in. And Jared, I know you're dying to ask the one that all Bond fans ask each other immediately. So go ahead.
I'm thinking you're leading me to the question of who is your favorite 007 actor?
Well, who do you think?
Timothy Dalton, obviously. So
I'll always be you know, there's Sean Connery and there's the other guys.
Yeah.
Right.
you know, I grew up with Sean Connery. He was the first one. He was the one. He was the iconic actor who invented the character, who, you know, defined the character on screen. I understand, you know, younger generations will, you know, usually pick whichever actor they saw first. And I understand that. You know, I know people who are, say, 10 years younger than me. They, you know, they like Roger Moore, and et cetera. But, you know, Connery will always be the guy for me.
Mm-hmm.
That said, I do think that another actor was the most accurate portrayal of Bond, according to the Fleming books.
Here we go, Jared.
Here we go.
Yep. And that is Timothy Dalton.
There it is.
All right. And thanks for being on the show. That's all the time we have.
I do think he encapsulated the literary Bond better than anybody else. And he's my number two. Timothy Dalton is my number two Bond.
Very interesting. Yeah,
I like them all. I like them all.
See, I've always said that I understand when people say that Timothy Dalton is the most like the books. The thing is, I'm a fan of the movies, and I don't necessarily want the movies to be like the books. So it doesn't bother me if movie Bond is different from book Bond. I like having different movie Bond from book Bond. And here's the funny thing, too, Raymond, is Bond, when I was a little kid and first was exposed to it, was Roger Moore, and I appreciate Roger Moore, and I treasure and cherish Roger Moore, but he's not my favorite Bond just because he's Roger Moore Bond. He's not Bond. You know, what he did was great. It just was different than basically everybody else, you know, and that's fine. Mm-hmm. It's just, it was his own thing. My answer is always, I think that Sean Connery was the best, but he's not my favorite. I can admit that he's the best, even if I like somebody else personally better, and that's Brosnan, who was much later than when I was a kid, you know, just because I'd always liked him and wanted him in the role, and when he didn't get it, I was very disappointed, so I was ecstatic when he got it later. But nobody cared. We had plenty of shows talk about that. So if your favorite Bond is Connery, then I'm gonna guess that your favorite Bond movie is one of the early Connerys. Is that true or not?
Yes, it is.
Okay. Well, that would be?
From Russia with Love.
Wow. Okay. I would have gone Goldfinger there. Interesting. Why is that?
Well, I just think it's very faithful to Fleming. I think it captures that period of the Cold War better than most of the other Bonds. It's very 1960s. Mm. I think Connery is at his best in that movie. It's got a great cast. Robert Shaw is an incredible villain. Lotta Lynya is an incredible villain. Mm. Daniela Bianchi is my favorite Bond girl of them all.
Absolutely.
I think she's totally beautiful. Mm-hmm. Love the score. I love the feel of the movie. It's just a great thriller. It's well written. It's well directed. And it more or less follows the book pretty accurately. You know, I'm a purist. I do care a lot about Ian Fleming and the books. I love the books. I reread them all the time. And, you know, I appreciate it when the movies are faithful to the books. So that kind of, you know, defines how I feel about a lot of the movies.
Sure. So,
but From Russia with Love, and I really like Dr. No a lot. I mm-hmm. think those first two films were so raw and gritty and edgy, and mm-hmm. they were groundbreakers. You've got to understand that no action thrillers were like that in 1962 and 1963. The only thing that came close was North by Northwest, 1959, the Alfred Hitchcock movie. And in many ways, I think the Bond movies kind of looked at that film and go, hey, we kind of want to be like this.
Yes, I agree.
Absolutely. You know, and Dr. No and From Russia with Love, they're still finding their way. They weren't exactly sure exactly where they were going to take the series. All the creative cylinders are firing mm-hmm. by everybody involved. The designers, the music people, the actors, the directors, the editor, everything is new in those movies. Mm-hmm. Nothing like those things that had ever been done. And then when Goldfinger came out, that was the one that really kind of defined the formula. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think they've been trying to remake Goldfinger ever since.
Absolutely.
You know, that was huge when Goldfinger came out. I maintain that Goldfinger is the most influential film of the 1960s from a pop culture based standpoint. Hmm. It influenced so many things. I mean, after Goldfinger came out, you would look in magazines and all the ads for fashions were spy themed. You got all the television shows that were knockoffs, like The Man from U.N.C.L.E. and I Spy and The Avengers and Secret Agent and Get Smart. You got the movies that were imitators, like Flint, the Flint movies and the Matt Helm movies. Mm-hmm. The mid 1960s was spy crazy. Mm-hmm. James Bond made the Cold War and spies glamorous. And when you think of spies, you hear that kind of music. You hear that wah, 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 yes. That brassy kind of sound. It's like archetypal. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
That's how innovative those first three and four movies were.
This raises a question that I want to throw in on it, and you can continue on that if you want. Is that that Jared and I and our other co-hosts over the last few months, we've talked about how Dr. No, people look back on it now, maybe not really thinking about it as clearly, and you think of it as kind of primitive or whatever, but there was most everything was there from the very beginning. I know they refined it, and I know they found their formula, and you know, and it was a fairly low budget movie, cost $1 million, and although back then $1 million was a lot of money, but I mean, just about everything is there. It's as slick mm-hmm. of a Connery Bond as any of Connery's Bonds, I think.
Yeah, I agree. You know, and it's hard edged, and it's, you know, it's rough around the edges, but mm-hmm. that's, I like it that way. I think, you know, it could be, you know, also a nostalgia factor for me, but, those, you know, those early films just, you know, bring back not only my childhood, but, I really do believe that they were the most creative of the entire series, because that's where it all began, mm-hmm. you know? Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I do appreciate everything that's come afterwards. I mean, I love the dance, you know, most everything that's come out. I really like the two Timothy Dalton movies. I like the Pierce Brosnan movies. I love the Daniel Craig movies. I like some of the Roger Moore movies. I like the George Lazenby movie a lot. Mm-hmm. You know, I think Honor, Majesty, Secret Service is a great film.
Absolutely.
So, you know, there's something to like about every Bond film, but for me, those early first three, mm-hmm. and you know, I teach cinema, I teach film history at a college. So I also look at it, you know, I tell my students, you have to judge a movie within the context of when it came out. And when you do that with Dr. No from Rush with Love and Goldfinger, they were groundbreakers. No question about it.
Absolutely. Jared, you're up.
So you've told us what your favorites are. You've run a gambit through mentioned a lot of different movies, and I agree with you on all those points. It's hard to find a bad Bond movie. Speaking of bad things, let's talk about bad guys. Who's your favorite villain?
Well, I would say I think Goldfinger is my favorite villain. He was just he was perfectly cast. I think Gert Frobe was great, and you know, he looked the part. He was dastardly enough. You know, I think he's the epitome of the Bond villain. You know, rich and egotistical and greedy, and
he gets great lines. I think we talked about that recently, Van. You and I.
Yeah.
He gets a lot of fun, flippant lines in the same vein that kind of Bond does.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, a lot of the villains do, but you know, you know, and he also had Odd Job, so the double villain there of Goldfinger and Odd Job and Goldfinger really was a 1-2 punch for that movie.
Would you say he's your favorite henchman then?
Yeah, probably so. I think
nice lead in, man.
He's the epitome of the henchmen. You know, I mean, they've always tried basically to repeat him. You mm-hmm. know, when you think about it.
Yep.
So yeah, I think he's those two. And another thing about Goldfinger, I mean, I may like From Russia with Love and Dr. No a little bit better than Goldfinger, but I do believe that Goldfinger, the movie, personally for me, is the one movie that's better than the novel. They improved the novel in the script for Goldfinger.
Wow. Often they just completely change it.
Yeah.
Same thing.
I mean, in the novel, Goldfinger's trying to rob Fort Knox,
right?
Which is really kind of impossible. But in the movie, they changed it to where he's really trying to, you know, radiate it, mm-hmm. Which would make his gold more valuable. And that's just much more ingenious.
If he had it to do over, he should have just dropped that bomb out of his jet as he flew over it.
Yeah.
Would have saved a lot of trouble, and it would have actually worked, maybe. Anyway, that raises one other thing you made me think of a minute ago, which is you said how Goldfinger is probably the most influential movie in the 60s. Along those lines, I'm going to ask you this. Certainly, I can see where Goldfinger influenced everything, certainly Bond, that came after. But I would posit to you that You Only Live Twice also puts down a blueprint that they went back to a lot. Is it not quite as influential as Goldfinger in a different way, or what do you think?
I don't think it is, but you see, really, when you think about it, You Only Live Twice is a remake of Dr. No, only on a much grander scale.
Okay, that's fair. I'm just thinking in terms of, like, you know, The Spy Who Loved Me is basically You Only Live Twice underwater.
It is.
And then Moonraker. Yeah, exactly, yeah. Back in space again. Yeah. And so it, whenever he fights, you know, there's sort of two kinds of Bond movies. There's the ones where he goes and spies and tries to do a job, like From Russia with Love. And there's the ones where he's like Superman saving the world from Lex Luthor, which is like those. And it's kind of the, way more than Dr. No, You Only Live Twice to me seems like the first real Superman Bond movie. If that makes sense.
Well, that's true. That's just because, you know, of the big budget and, you know, making everything bigger than the previous one.
Right.
But when you break it down to the basic structure and the plot, you know, Dr. No, You Only Live Twice. It's about a villain that's on an island that's got his own little fortress, and he's messing with a government stuff, something in an attempt to play two countries off the other in order to start a war so he could profit from it.
Yep, that's true. There you go. Our last General Bond question is, you mentioned the gold, you and Jared both started out with the Goldfinger score. Is that your favorite Bond soundtrack or score, or is there another one you ended up liking better?
No, actually, it's not. I mean, I think it's a great one, and certainly one of the most iconic and groundbreaking, and, you know, the first one that really sort of took off and kind of defined the sound of Bond. But I prefer, actually, Honor Majesty's Secret Service and You Only Live Twice as my favorite scores.
Those are some
both
good ones.
Yeah, they
both
are.
Of those are, I think, are John Barry at his best.
Yeah, I agree. Nice. Jared, you want to handle the games and comics little section?
Oh, you know I do.
All right, get at it.
All right, sir. Speaking of games, Mr. Benson, do you have a favorite 007 game, be it a role-playing game, a board game, a video game? I suspect you have worked on some of these things in the past.
Well, I have. I wrote and designed two of the very first computer games that came out in the 80s. One was A View to a Kill and Goldfinger. They were text adventures, the kind, you know, like, kind of like Infocom, Zork.
I'm familiar with them.
Yeah, it's all text. You know, I wrote and designed those. I also worked on the role-playing game, the Victory Games role-playing game. The guys that created that, Jerry Klug and Robert Kern, they were friends of mine in New York. And I wrote and designed one of the adventure modules, which was You Only Live Twice 2, Back of Beyond. That came out in 86, I guess it was. So, yeah. So I was kind of doing all that stuff, you know, when games were just coming out.
I am a video game collector and a board game collector, and you've just listed off pretty much my wish list of things I'm still hunting for. So one of these days I'm going to find those things. But after your initial foray into the computer games, you weren't involved in anything after that into any other gaming stuff?
No, I wasn't. I mean, I worked in the computing gaming industry in the 80s and some of the in the first half of the 90s before I became the Bond novelist. So I was writing and designing computer games, but they weren't always Bond. Back in the 60s, I really liked the Goldfinger board game, the Milton Bradley board game. I think is a great game. It's a really good strategy game. I also had the Thunderball one too.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very nice. So that's what he's got on games. What about comic books? You read any of the 007 comic books?
Yeah, I don't read them all. But, you know, back in the 80s, there were some that I thought were really good. Mike Grell, I think, was his
Mike
name.
Mm-hmm.
I liked his. Permission to Die, I think, was the name of it. I thought those were pretty good. Then, you know, there's been so many that came out, and then I just didn't keep up with them. The current ones, I just read Varger.
Varger, right, yeah.
Varger, yeah. I just read that. I thought it was pretty good. So I'm going to try to read more of that series.
I would recommend that. I think the stuff that Dynamite's doing now are great.
They really are good. I'm a very I'm very picky when it comes to comics adaptations and stuff like that. But yeah, I the last year or so, I've read most of what Dynamite's been putting out, and I've been extremely impressed. I mean, it was who's the writer, Jared, that started out? Warren Ellis, yeah, Warren Ellis at
Warren
first,
Ellis.
But then there've been some others too, right? So yeah, they're doing really good work there, I think.
Yeah, I really like the original comic strips, the ones from the 50s and the 60s. So mm-hmm. I think they're really good. Mm-hmm. They're very well done as far as being very faithful to the books. And, you know, actually, when I read the books for the first time, I didn't really envision Sean Connery as Bond, even though I'd seen him already in the movies. I kind of envisioned a guy that kind of looked like the McCluskey drawing of Bond in those comic strips.
Oh, that's cool.
And I'd never seen the comic strips at that point either. But that's to this day, mm-hmm. that's the guy I see when I read a Bond novel.
That's neat. Yeah. Yeah, it's neat how we imagine, you know, what characters look like in our head, even if it's different from how they've been portrayed on screen. It's, yeah, we all have our own little movie in our head. I want to talk about when you took over and were writing Bond, the thing I'm curious about is when you get to write Bond, I'm thinking that you probably first are just pinching yourself, right? Because you're getting to do something that lots of writers would you know, dream of or kill for. But then I'm thinking that reality sets in and you go, good grief, you know, the challenge ahead of me. So what was kind of your first reaction on getting the gig? And then what was it like to deal with? I mean, what kind of challenges did you encounter when you started to do it?
Well, when I got the call, it was from Peter Jansen Smith, who was the chairman of, at the time, it was called Glidrose. They changed their name to Ian Fleming Publications a little later. But Peter was Ian Fleming's literary agent, and he had become chairman of the company. And we had become friends after The Bedside Companion was published. And when he called me and asked me if I wanted to do it, my first thought was, I can't do this. I don't know if I can do this. But then I didn't say that. But I said, oh, my God. Yeah, sure. I have to try. You know, if I didn't try, I'd feel like a fool. So, you know, it was kind of an audition process in a way. I had to write a plot outline on spec. And that had to be approved by not only Ian Fleming Publications, but also by the British publisher and the American publisher. And so I wrote that, and it was approved. And then I had to write the first four chapters on spec. And same approval process, and got through that, and then I got the contract. Then I had to write the book. So... I just didn't really think about how difficult or what big shoes I was filling. I was aware of it, what big shoes I was filling, not only Ian Fleming's, but John Gardner and Kingsley Amis. I just set about doing it and trying to have fun with it. You know, this was, you know, trying to write the Bond book I wanted to write. I was given some directives. We talked about at the beginning, you know, what would my Bond series be? You know, John Gardner had set his Bond in contemporary times, which was the 1980s and early 90s. We talked about possibly setting my books back in the 50s or 60s. But then the Fleming Estate decided, they said, no, let's keep it current. Let's keep it in sync with the movies. And in fact, let's make M a woman. Just like the movies. Because,
yeah.
You know, when I started, the Brosnan movies had started.
Right.
So that was a directive by them. Otherwise, I had free reign. So they wanted it set in contemporary times with Emma Woman. And I said, you know, I'd really like to get rid of Bond's political correctness that had creeped in. Mm. I wanted him to smoke again and drink again and womanize again and, you know, be the rake that he was. And they said, that's fine. You know, as long as you can make it work in contemporary time. So, you know, that's what I did. I made the world around him kind of politically correct, but he was not. And that, you know, might have made him anachronistic, but it also made him stand out. And I, you know, it emphasized his character. So I think it worked.
Well, that's when M was calling him a misogynistic dinosaur anyway, right? So you were fitting in with her.
That's true. Yeah.
Well, let me ask you this then. You wrote those original novels, and then you also wrote three of the Pierce Brosnan movie novelizations. You did the second, third, and fourth one, I believe. And
right.
How does that process compare? I mean, which I would say, like, which is more challenging? What are the different challenges, and is one more satisfying than the other? What kind of compare the two in terms of you as a writer?
The original novels are much more satisfying. They are much more difficult, and they take a lot longer because, you know, I come up with the plots. I travel to all the locations that I was writing about and did research. And I had a lot more time. Basically, I had a whole year to write each book. But the novelizations had to be done quickly. And, you know, they gave me a script, and I had to follow the script and just basically flesh it all out. You know, when you get a script, if you just put it into prose, it's only about 30,000 words.
Right.
You know, I had to turn in a book that was more like, you know, 70,000 words. So, you know, you flesh it out. But also, those novelizations had to be completed in about 6 weeks.
Good grief.
Yeah, so it was like a marathon writing those things. Whereas I had a nice leisurely 6 months or 7 months to write one of the original, not counting the research and the initial development.
When you wrote the novelizations, and just one or two more things about novelizations, we'll get to the other two original books. But when you wrote the novelizations, you know, you say you had to flesh them out a little bit, and you actually put in some backstory from some of those characters that weren't really explained much in the Brosnan movies. Were you working from earlier drafts, or were you allowed to kind of freelance on that?
Well, I was always working with earlier drafts. Usually I had to write the book about 6 months before the movie came out. So, you know, if you know that while they're filming, they're constantly changing the script. So many times, you know, my finished book would not, I would say in all three cases, my finished book does not dovetail with the finished movie totally. So, yeah, there's scenes that are different. And in some cases, I was able to add some of my own original scenes.
Okay.
Like in Tomorrow Never Dies, there's a early scene with Wei Lin.
That's what I was going
to
ask you
about. How she gets the mission to go to Germany to make contact with Bond. I just put that in there. Well, I asked permission to do it. You know, I had to, with the novelizations, I'm working with Eon.
Right.
And usually it's either the screenwriters or somebody that's kind of a liaison to them.
When you did Tomorrow Never, since you're talking about Tomorrow Never Dies, I just want to, one more on that. So, my understanding is that originally the script had what's her name? The brunette. No, they're both brunettes. That's not helpful. the American.
Terry Hatcher?
Yeah, Terry Hatcher's character was more in it, but because she, the actress, got pregnant, they kind of gave more of the story to Wei Lin. So when you were working on the book, did you have more? I'm trying to remember now. Did you have more Terry Hatcher or less Terry Hatcher? How did that all play out in terms of, because they drastically changed it?
I don't remember. I don't think there was more of her character in the book, in the script that I worked from.
Okay.
I don't think so. I really don't remember. I don't think there was.
Interesting. Okay. Jared, over to you.
I knew you were going to say that because my iPad just went to sleep. Oh, here we go. All right. Oh yeah, here's a great broader question. How, if at all, did Ian Fleming's writing affect or influence your writing in general or on the Bond books? Obviously, you were a big Bond guy, so you probably read a lot of them before you got the gig. Did you feel any of the influence there, or just kind of expand on that if you would?
Well, I think Ian Fleming has always been an influence on me, and you know, I don't think I can write like him. I don't think anybody can write like him. And I wasn't even I wasn't expected to write like him. I was expected to capture the spirit of his books in my writing. And but I do actually follow his work regime. He used to basically write the first draft of his book all in one go, without looking back, without, you know, going back and revising or, you know, doing anything to what he'd already written. He would just keep going, plowing ahead forward every day for those 2 months that he was in Jamaica. And he would go home with a finished manuscript. And then once he got home, then he would revise and add and delete and polish and whatever he had to do. That's how I work. You know, I write the first draft first without looking back, because that establishes a pace that stays with the book. So that's one thing I got from him. You know, I also am a big believer in research. I wanted to, like he did, he had to know the places that he wrote about. He went to Japan for You Only Live Twice. I went to Japan for The Man with the Red Tattoo. So in those aspects, yeah, I was like him, but I would never, ever compare myself to him in any kind of way as far as quality. I mean, I hold him in very high regard.
Well,
very good.
In terms of Bond novels, which is your favorite one in general, and which is your favorite one that you wrote?
Well, my favorite Fleming book is From Russia with Love, just like the movies. I think it's his masterpiece. But there's three or four others that I can name that I think are also really, really, really great. As far as my own, you know, that's kind of like choosing between children. But if I did have to pick one, I would say High Time to Kill. I think is probably my favorite.
That's a great book.
I like the whole New Union trilogy. I think those three books really stand really as one for me.
You agree too, Jared, do you not?
I do. I like those a lot. My, you know, if I'm allowed to gush a little bit, my favorite one is Double Shot. I love Double Shot.
Oh, thanks.
Oh, no problem. Thank you.
So, you talked about how Fleming would write. In terms of other 007 authors, were there any other things you took from the ones that, because there are two, I guess, just it was just Fleming and Gardner before you, right?
Well, Kingsley Amis was the one writer.
Yeah. Are there any other things that you took from them that you tried to include in your books, like the way they did certain things, the way they approached certain things that you thought you wanted to try to emulate?
Not really, no. I kind of look at all the Bond authors' books as sort of separate universes of James Bond.
Okay, interesting.
Because, you know, they're not really continuations of Fleming's series, especially. I mean, you know, you look at John Gardner's books. Bond is in the 80s, you know, and has, you know, is he aged? I don't know. Well, he kind of has, but he doesn't say exactly how old he is, you know. So this is kind of like really kind of an alternate universe of Bond, you know. And my books were even later, you know. Is this the same Bond who was in World War II? You know, well, he would be pretty old.
That's right.
You know, you just kind of, you don't think about that. You try to not to call attention to the real timeline of the real character and just kind of pick him up intact from the 50s and 60s and plop him down into your time period and start from there and just go.
And that's pretty much what the movies do too, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Jay?
When we talked earlier, you said that when you read a Bond novel, you kind of pictured almost from the comic strip version. How about when you write a Bond novel? When you're writing a Bond novel, do you see a particular actor in your mind, or is it just more of a...
Nope, it's still that same guy. It's still that same,
still that same guy?
Shadowy figure. But, you know, fans have come up to me over the years, and they would say, for example, God, I can really hear Pierce Brosnan say those lines. Another one might say, I can really hear Sean Connery say those lines. You know, and that's very gratifying, because if a reader can put into their mind who they see as Bond in my books, then I've succeeded.
Mm-hmm. Very good. Yes.
We were talking about the Union trilogy, and we talked about some of those early, the Connery ones with Spectre and all. I mean, clearly you, something about Spectre, you gravitated to it because you wanted to do your own. So we've had the Union, we've had Spectre, we've had Quantum briefly. What is it about these secretive organizations that's so appealing to us? Why do we want to see our villains having board meetings and giving minutes of the meeting and stuff with occasional electrocutions thrown in? What is it about that that appeals to us?
Well, I think it became archetypal in the 60s.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, the whole Spectre thing, we kind of, that was kind of established, and it kind of, it became, well, like I said, it's archetypal. Mm-hmm. And it works, you know, to have this sort of organization. I mean, you know, Fleming actually started off with SMERSH.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then he kind of played with having the Mafia in a book or two. And then Spectre came about. And that was kind of in response to an attempt at detente with the Cold War. Instead of using the Russians as villains, he was using, you know, just international criminals.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that it just works, especially for something like Bond, dealing with an organization that has a lot of money and power and resources that just kind of goes with the territory.
Yeah.
Yes,
you made me think of something that I've never thought of before. I mean, if you think about it, even though the Soviet Union, the communists, the Russians were the bad guys in the background of so much of Bond's history, really there's not very many of his stories, the movies, the books, where the actual Soviet Union are the bad guys. I mean, often they're kind of being fooled.
They are in the books.
Yeah.
In the early books when SMERSH is the villain, the main organization.
That's right. That's right.
That's pretty much in, you know, Casino Royale, Live and Let Die.
Yeah.
The Soviets are behind Moonraker. They're in From Russia with Love. And I believe Goldfinger's working for SMERSH, if I remember correctly.
That's right. It's in the movies they change it to Spectre. Yeah, but in the movies they change it to Spectre, and suddenly the Russians are being played just like the Americans and the British.
Yeah, in the movies, the Russians really were not the villains, no.
Mm-hmm.
Very nice. Speaking of movies. Oh, I'm sorry, man. Do you have a follow-up?
No.
I was just so excited to ask this question. It's the one I'm most excited to ask. Speaking of movies... if you could see any of your novels turned into a film, which one would you pick?
Well, High Time to Kill.
There you go.
You know, it's got a mountain climbing plot, which they've never done. It's got Nepal, which they've never been to. So right there, those two things I think would make for a unique and interesting Bond film.
And let's say you got a time machine, so you can take anybody from any time. Which actor would you put in it?
Well, gee, that's kind of a silly question, but I guess I would if it was a time, you know, travel thing. I'd put Connery in it.
All right.
You hesitate. I'm like, is he not going to take Connery? I'm just in there going, he's going to take Connery. Wait. He's hesitating.
Well, you never know. He might have had somebody else in mind when he wrote it.
That's true.
He could have gone Gary Coleman for all we know. You don't know.
I was thinking that it could have been your boy there, Jared.
Timothy Dalton, that was kind of
Timothy Dalton. Well, he could do it, you know.
So. Well, I mean, Gibraltar is the closest we got really to mountain climbing, I guess.
But we're talking serious mountain climbing, and you know, we're talking Mount Everest type mountain climbing.
It's hard to imagine that there's not that many things left that they haven't done in the movie. So, yeah, I mean, the fact that you've come up with a couple of things, that's pretty remarkable that there's anything left.
It's pretty good.
Yeah. Okay, so while we're talking about writing, when I write my novels, I like to be by myself in complete silence. So I'm just curious, what's your process when you were writing the Bond novels in particular, in general? Did you have a particular place? Is there music? No music? Is there anything you do every time that gets you in the right mindset? What do you do?
Well, I have an office in my home, and that's where I've written all my novels. And I can write with music or without. It doesn't matter. If I remember correctly, when I was writing Bond, I would put on some heavy-duty rock and roll. And not just rock and roll. It would be more like, you know, space rock, jamming, heavy, progressive, instrumental, you know, zonk out music.
Interesting.
Yeah. I don't know if you've ever heard of a band called Osric Tentacles.
I have not.
They're a British psychedelic band that is electronic and heavy, with heavy beats, and it's all instrumental with heavy psychedelic acid guitars and synthesizers and stuff. I remember listening to a lot of that while I was writing Bond because it just, I don't know, it helped me out with the action sequences.
Huh. It's not what I was expecting you to say. That's very interesting.
No, anybody would think that Bond novels were written to Osric Tentacles. You know,
Look,
all of a sudden, my time travel question doesn't seem so strange anymore.
It doesn't. That's right. All right,
Jed. Wow. Well, since you're talking about writing, do you still have one burning 007 story idea inside you that you never got to bring out?
No.
Good. Well, that's good. It's good to know that you're fulfilled with what you've done. But yeah, we had to ask if you had one still in the basement somewhere.
Well, if you had the opportunity to write for like Dynamite to do like a 6-issue series for them, could you come up with a story off at the drop of a hat or a metal?
Well, I don't know if it could be at the drop of the hat, but I'd be interested in doing it. If they came to me. Sure, I'd say, yeah, I'd give it a go. I've always actually wanted to write for some comics. I've wanted to try that. I've never done it. I know that it's a specific skill. Mm-hmm. It's kind of like screenwriting, really. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I'd love to do that.
I know the guy. Oh, I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
I know the guy who owns White Rocket Comics.
Oh, so. No. We're way too small. But Dynamite needs to give Raymond a call.
Yes, they do.
Because I would
love to
see, if nothing else, I'd love to see him do an adaptation of High Time to Kill and the Union Trilogy. That would be awesome.
Oh, gosh, that would be so good.
Do like 3 6-issue miniseries and cover the whole Union Trilogy. Can you imagine that?
If you know the people there, you make that suggestion.
Man,
they'd have to go to Ian Fleming Publications to get the rights to do it. But
they need to do that.
That would be very cool.
That would be cool. We need to make that happen, Jared. Let's get on it. Let's do that on Tuesday. Put that down.
Okay. Yeah, next Tuesday.
Yes. We need to talk a little bit about your other non-007 work. What are some of the things that you've done outside of Bond that everybody should know about?
Well, I think I've done a lot of original novels. I've done a lot of what we call tie-in writing for existing properties. And, you know, I've done video game novelizations and things like that. I worked for Tom Clancy a couple of years and did 2 Splinter Cell novels.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I did a couple of Metal Gear Solid novels, and I did a Dying Light novel recently, mm-hmm. and I did a Hitman novel. Okay. But my original novels are the ones that I feel are my best work. Mm-hmm. Most recently, The Secrets on Chicory Lane just came out last October. This is a... You know, it's very different from Bond, I tell you. Mm-hmm. It's a coming of age mystery about a woman who she's a writer in Chicago. She gets a letter from an attorney in Texas who says her childhood male friend that she grew up with, he's on death row and he wants to see her before he's executed. So on the way to go see him, she remembers the various her relationship with him over several decades, and once she gets face to face with him, he reveals the big secret.
Nice.
So there's that, and then this coming May, on May 1st, I have a new novel coming out called In the Hush of the Night, and this is an FBI story about a female FBI agent in Chicago who is the human trafficking person at the FBI, and she's investigating a serious human trafficking case that takes place in Chicago and in Michigan. And it involves some Russians and some, it's a heavy duty thriller.
Hmm. Very good. Very nice. Wow. Yep. Diverse stuff. That's cool.
Yeah. Now my magnum opus, I think, is The Black Stiletto. Have you heard of The Black Stiletto?
You have adapted that for TV or something? Is that the one?
Well, it's a 5-book serial that I wrote. And it's being developed now for hopefully a TV series or a movie. We came really close a couple of years ago. ABC optioned it and developed it and then decided not to do it for some reason. But it's now in some other hands, and we're, you know, hoping some things are going to happen with it. But The Black Stiletto, I think it's the best thing I've ever done. And it's 5 books. That's really a serial. It's really one book divided into 5. It's about a woman in the late 1950s. She's from Texas, but she goes to New York, and she puts on a mask and a costume, calls herself the Black Stiletto, and she fights for social justice and kind of like a Batman kind of character,
nice.
Vigilante. And she's active for 5 years and mysteriously disappears. We cut to the present day. There's a grown man in the Chicago suburbs taking care of his mother who has Alzheimer's, and she's in a nursing home, and he discovers that she was the Black Stiletto. It's 2 parallel stories, one in the past that tells her story and one in the present that tells his story with her. And it takes you through her 5 years of activity from 1958 to 1962, as well as, you know, them dealing with threats from the past and the present.
Very pulpy. I like it.
Yeah. No, it's good.
That's right. Really
cool. The Black Stiletto started. First book was published in 2011, and the 5th book. There was one a year up until 2014. So
okay,
and then it's finished. You know, so it's 5 books. Mm-hmm. Check them out.
That sounds awesome. It's got a little Watchmen in it, almost. It seems like. Or elements.
Yeah, a little bit. There's you know, some people have compared it to that too. There's a website that has some videos that we made and some sample like cartoons and, you know, comic strip kind of pulp stuff, and that's theblackstiletto.net.
Okay.
So if you go to that site, you can explore the world of the Black Stiletto.
Very good.
Man. That's cool.
Jared, you want to round out our last of our questions, and we'll kind of wrap things up. Let Mr. Benson get on with business.
Well, he's pretty much answered all that, hasn't he? Okay.
Yeah. Going forward, though, right? Because you said that was done. You said that was done, right? So what's your current – what's upcoming?
He's got the – oh, I'm sorry. He mentioned it earlier.
I have In the Hush of the Night coming out in May. I've written I'm finishing up a new novel, which right now the working title is called Blues in the Dark. It's something totally, completely different. I guess, you know, I like writing standalone novels more than series, and I just explore, I don't know, my dark side. So,
well, I like
I've been writing a lot of female protagonists.
Yeah.
In the Hush of the Night is my 11th book with a female protagonist.
Wow.
Yeah. So I joke that I used up all my testosterone writing James Bond. So
that'll do it. Drained you right out. That'll do it. Yeah. How about that? Okay. Well, let's see. We sure do appreciate you coming on. Jared, did you have any last comments or thoughts for Mr. Benson before we close out?
I just have one rapid-fire question that a friend of mine, he would kill me if I didn't ask. Okay. Scale of 1 to 10, Mr. Benson. If a friend of mine brought you a plot called Silver Hands about a woman who has silver hands, her name is Agatha Silver Hands, and she's a James Bond villain. 1 to 10, how interested would you be to take that up?
Well, for one thing, I couldn't take it up.
No, you got to go with a low number and break his heart for me.
No, I mean, I just couldn't. I mean, that's, you know, as far as me writing for Bond again, you know, I had my 6.
Nice.
Nice.
Well played.
So, you know, it's not even anything I can consider. And in fact, I'm not even allowed to look at Bond plots. Fans have sent me, you know, hey, Mr. Benson, what about this for a Bond story? And I'm not even allowed to look at it. I'm supposed to to send it off to Ian Fleming Publications. And then they write them a letter saying, we're not looking at this and et cetera, you know, for legal reasons, you know.
Yeah. I'm really glad I asked the silly question. My friend was being silly, but I'm glad I asked the silly question because now we got to see how that works, peek behind the scenes. So that's cool.
Absolutely. Okay. Well, I think we will wrap things up. We sure do appreciate you coming on. This was really cool to get to talk to you and to get to learn a whole lot more about your Bond books and your other writings and everything. And we very much appreciate it.
Well, I appreciate you asking me. And for anybody interested in any of my other works as well as Bond, go to my website. It's RaymondBenson.com.
There you go.
And don't forget theblackstiletto.net.
This has been a White Rocket Entertainment production.